Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast.
Hey, girl, hey.
What's up, Carrie Rosso?
Nothing, Jeanette Jerzyk. I'm super fired up for today's show because I super duper love our guest.
I know, she's pretty amazing. And she's in person, which is always fun when we're here in the Illinois Public Media Studios in Urbana, Illinois.
I gotta tell you, so I often joke that I have a radio face, but this person has the cutest voice ever. And so, like, she's made for a podcast because she's adorable in real life, but also she just has the sweetest voice ever. Like, she could read me the phone book.
And she was on stage right here in our flagship community where it all began. What? I was about to say 11 years ago, but then I was maybe going to age you. But I think I just did it anyway.
Yeah. There's so much other stuff that ages me. That's nothing.
No, I'm very proud of the 11-year history of That's What She Said that started here in Champaign and now is in 14 cities and growing, Carrie. 14.
What the heck?
I know. I mean, some of those shows are still on their way, but it's been a banner year. It's been really exciting. And this is our 10th season of the podcast. So if this is the first time you're joining us, welcome to the She Said Project podcast. I'm Jeanette, your host, national director of the She Said Project.
And I'm Carrie Rosso, your co-founder, sidekick.
Sidekick. You're my main kick.
Well, I've been called a lot of things, but not a main kick.
No, but I love that we get to check in with these incredible women. And it's my opportunity to check in with you and see you because our real lives are packed. We're busy ladies, just like so many of the women that we get to meet, so many of our listeners. I'm so glad we are providing entertainment for your drive today while you're listening to this podcast. Let's get the party started. Myla Thomas Fuller was on stage, and That's What She Said in Champaign, Urbana, not too long ago. And I'm really excited that she's here with us in person in the studio. Welcome, Myla. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thank you. You all are making me blush over here.
We're just going to talk about you and how great you are all day.
Oh, I could go on and on. And not only are you fabulous, but like one of my favorite things on the planet, cake.
Oh, yes. She is.
Can we bring that in before we get to
this
her?
Before we even talk about your story.
The most important thing.
More importantly, we're going to talk about your business. Because for the first time ever, and That's What She Said, her story, we had a cake sponsor because Miss Myla owns the local franchise of Nothing Bundt Cakes and she brought cake to every rehearsal. Yeah, you heard me.
My hips are proof.
I was gonna say, I think Carrie showed up to more rehearsals for this show than any other show.
There could be a connection.
I hadn't put that together until just now, but these are some delicious cakes. And Myla, I know it's not really part of your story that you shared on stage, but how is life as a business owner and delivering cakes to bring people joy? Tell us.
I was going to say, every day is different and I love it. You know, it's high energy. And I think what I love most about it is to see people's faces when they try a flavor for the first time, when they visit for the first time, just experiences. And I'm real fortunate because most people coming in to buy cake are really in a good mood. So it's a fantastic opportunity to have just conversations.
So my husband has this theory. Don't ever build a career where it involves people going through something dark or sad or miserable. Like, don't have a career where you have to fire people or that involves their worst. Find a career where you are surrounded by joy. I consider what I do my life's purpose, and I get to live in joy and connect with women and be there when they're celebrated.
Right.
It's joy and gratitude.
I mean, everybody's happy to come in and get a cake. I can't imagine anybody's coming in and saying, like, this is bullshit. You know, like, they're happy to be there. It's cake.
And I had someone come in today, and we just celebrated 4 years, and he was there during our fourth birthday party and just came in really upbeat and happy and, you know, prepared to try one of the new flavors. So our tagline is bring the joy, and I really love that.
And you do. I think it makes it so the fact that not just do we love cake and we love you, but what you put into the community. You know, you're always out there supporting other people. You're bringing your own joy that you just have in your peppy personality, but also with the cakes. And you support, I mean, we talk about women supporting women, but you, boy, you do it.
Yes, and that was my goal. Once I survived that first year, because everything was new, my goal first year was never to run out of cake. And then when I hit the second year, I wanted to be more visible in the community, to find out more about the projects that were happening and how I could help other people. So we do like a ton of fundraisers now and charity events. And I think that's the fun part, to give back. Because we opened at the worst possible time, 2020. Pandemic. Oops. I didn't see that coming. So.
But you kept going forward. You didn't stop.
Because of the community.
Oh. Hey, we all had to eat our feelings.
Exactly. And also there were people very well who said, COVID. You know, we want to support you because we realize that this is a tough time. Oh. And this community, I would say, really embraced businesses and really put the focus on what can you do to help them, you know, get through this difficult time, because it wasn't something that we knew would happen. Like, the grand opening was 2020.
Wow. One thing I learned about Myla during our conversations, I mean, she's been featured in the paper, and just talking to her, you know, she comes from a tech background, like educational technology, mm-hmm. am I remembering? And I mean, this huge career where she was training and some national director of some things and like deep into technology, and then literally just one day flipped a switch. I'm going to own a bakery. And so, of course, I'm going to dig into that and dig in with a fork. I was going for a cake reference. I don't know. But I loved what you said about I wanted a business where I get to show up with something that makes people happy. I mean, that was part of your motivation. And I love that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Can we?
We could talk all day.
Can we get to her piece? Because I want to talk. I want everybody to hear it. And then I want to talk about it.
Yeah. Because it's one specific time in Myla's life that, you know, isn't really about owning the bakery. We kind of went off on a tangent. Yeah. Your story that you shared on stage, and that's what she said, was a difficult time in your life. But because you bring the joy, like we found the humor, right? Looking back, right. It could be humorous, but I'm sure it wasn't all funny in the moment. It was about when your son was born.
Absolutely. And I want to say you all, through that process, helped me find the humor and remember the humor in it all by dealing with a tough topic. I was thinking about that.
We are big fans. When you can make people laugh, when you're talking about something really hard and difficult, I mean, it's a gift, because you're giving the audience a gift. Oh, my gosh, she's talking about hard stuff. But it's like a relief. We can all laugh together because you give us permission to do so by you creating that memory. So let's just cut to the tape. Let's listen to Myla's story and then we can dive in. But pay attention. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. Grab those tissues. Enjoy Myla Thomas Fuller with her story, I Delivered, on stage. And that's what she said, 2024.
When it came to childbirth, I did more than enough research to know that the videos scared me to the core. I'm not sure if the fear was because I watched too many episodes of Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice, but what I do know, I was terrified. Maybe it was the actors screaming during labor, or the fear that my spouse might faint in the delivery room, which would then mean I'd be left across the finish line all alone. And did you ever notice on TV when they faint? It's in slow motion. Boom. Regardless, the future was inevitable, and the baby would be coming soon. As I laid in a hospital bed, the doctor listed the potential complications that my baby and I might be facing. On Grey's Anatomy, when this happens, the camera usually pans in to capture your emotion. But I wasn't feeling like a close-up at the moment. But I was choosing to make the best of a situation that was entirely out of my control. So I decided to get comfortable living in my new large mansion. I was in a private suite on the north wing, and I was very fortunate to even have a private chef on call. So I picked up the phone to call my chef, and like clockwork, by the third ring, a familiar voice said, Carl Hospital Cafeteria, what would you like to order tonight? Yes, this is how I coped with hospital bed rest as a result of being diagnosed with preeclampsia. Now, the turn of events all started at my appointment for a scheduled contraction stress test. A sensor was placed on my belly, and after the nurse looked at the monitor, she said, did you feel that? And I said, yeah, that's the baby. He's turning on his left side. Then she said, well, what's happening now? And I said, well, that's the baby again. Now he's doing a full turn. At which point, She took the sensor off me. She started moving around the room really, really fast. So I started scanning my mind for episodes of Grey's Anatomy that might cover this reaction. A plethora of scenarios raced through my head until she very calmly said to me, "No, those are contractions, and you need to be admitted now." I responded, "Wait, no, I have a meeting this morning." So then she pulls out a wheelchair, and I explained, "A wheelchair is not necessary." She gave me the look, and I sat in a wheelchair. Now, as I was being wheeled down the hall, I called my husband, my mom, and I alerted my job that I was gonna need to take a sick day. I instantly regretted in that moment not following that advice to pack your hospital bag sooner rather than later. As soon as I arrived in the hospital room, several staff entered the room. They were explaining the various roles, what was happening to me, and the full medical plan. And I thought, wow, this is just like on TV. But my baby was preparing for his entrance. The only problem, it was too early. Another team member walked in briskly. They pulled out a needle. And as this process was being explained to me, I asked, "Have we missed that one window of opportunity for the second required shot that helps women at risk of a premature birth?" He asked if I was a doctor or had family members in medicine. And I very proudly explained that I saw a similar situation on the crossover episode of Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice. But unlike the character on Private Practice, I was lucky. That window of opportunity was not missed, but I was gonna be in a hospital for a while, a long while. It was mid-May, May 16th to be exact, and the baby was due July 20th. I came to terms with being in a hospital for an extended period. I was dealing with an unknown diagnosis related to my unborn baby's health. I prayed a lot, and I found different ways to cope. I also found peace in this very rare time in my life where I was able to just sit and be still. Then I started reflecting, wondering, worrying. I wondered, why is this happening to me? What did I do wrong? Perhaps is it because I don't drink the recommended amount of water each day? Or was it that day I had a teaspoon of ice cream and I didn't check to see if it was pasteurized and maybe I have listeria? I also worried about my dissertation because I wasn't finished with it yet, and my advisor kept reminding me that my clock was running out. Then I was aggravated with myself because I kept delaying that iconic photo of my belly in a long flowing dress for a maternity shoot. Now I'd never have it with my hair flying in the air like Beyonce. And what's even worse, my husband is a professional photographer. But I decided that day that I would just stop worrying and make the best of a situation because I had no control over anything. I was in the hospital. I spent my days praying, flipping through magazines, watching soap operas, and talking to family and friends. Several weeks later, I woke up on a beautiful morning to find both my mom and husband in the room with me. My doctor came in and explained that the best course of action would be a scheduled C-section, and we settled on a date. I was able to relax a little because now we had a plan, but that didn't last. Next thing we know, in walks the entire medical staff like it's the grand finale of Grey's Anatomy. We all sat up straight. Then someone said, "It's time." I said, "I don't understand." They said, "Time for you to deliver." My husband said, "Time to deliver what?" We still can't believe he said that because we hadn't ordered a pizza, but this is now our family's joke, and we laugh about it all the time. But seriously, I said to the doctor, "But I'm scheduled for a C-section next week." At this point, the maternal fetal specialist comes in and says, "We can see that the baby is in a little stress, so we feel that it's best to deliver now." Well, the moment was here. And as I was laying on the table, they explained that I would be awake and that my husband would be there to cut the cord. My doctor appeared and I felt relief. And I realized that the baby had a chance of being born with some issues and that that moment of truth would be here soon. And then I heard them say, "He's here." But I didn't hear him cry. I was so upset because on TV when they don't cry, they cut to commercial. But in this moment, I just kept saying to myself, "Cry, baby, please cry. Just cry, baby, please cry." And then he cried. And boy, did he cry. And I kept thinking, if he's crying, that means he's breathing. If he's crying, that means his lungs are strong and developed. But I couldn't lift myself up off the table to see. But I did see them hold him up like that one scene in The Lion King. And then my husband was asked to cut the cord. The anesthesiologist explained to me that they were going to take him to the NICU for all the tests. I tried not to worry, and then my husband ran to me and said, "The baby looks great, but they said I have to go with him now. You did great. I love you." Before they left, the doctor came over. She smiled and said softly, "He looks really good, but we won't know until we run tests. He is breathing on his own, and that is a good sign." They quickly brought the baby up to my face, and she said, "Meet your son." That made my day. Christopher was born weighing only 2 pounds. He seemed to demand attention at the NICU. The nurses said he definitely lets us know what he wants and when he wants it. His biggest challenge was learning to eat and gain weight. And after a 62-day stay in the neonatal intensive care unit, Christopher was released from his first home, the Carl NICU, and he went home on August 7th. He had no health concerns other than low birth weight. Well, after going home with our sweet baby, I reflected on all that I learned. I learned to release the worry, find silver linings, laugh with family and friends. I also learned how incredibly thankful I was for the care and support we received from our medical team members. They left a lasting impression on me. They were there with me during my most vulnerable moments. And years later, what all of this taught me was to let go of being so risk-averse. I decided to leave behind my safe and structured career in education technology, and I opened a bakery. During the pandemic, and with that new business, I now had the perfect opportunity to just say thank you. One day, as I was mapping out deliveries, I decided to do a surprise cake drop. I delivered enough cake for all the NICU staff. I also delivered cake to the Carl Auxiliary House. That's a guest house that provides a home away from home for families of intensive care patients. Through it all, I was at peace. I delivered, and I brought the joy.
Boy, did you deliver.
Yes, you delivered. You like the double entendre? Entendre there. But you did. You delivered on stage, and you were nervous.
I was very nervous. Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tell that night. You were a rock star.
I was ready to run out the back door. I whispered to Jane, I'm like, I don't think I can do this.
But you did it. You nailed it. Absolutely.
I did it. Thank you.
And the women out there know you're not asked to be, and that's what she said, and the show's tomorrow. You know, these women get time to really dig into their story and make sure it's written in a way that they feel supported and ready. They have lots of rehearsal time and lots of cake.
Yes. Yeah, and I was going to say one thing someone told me years ago, whenever you have to do something and you're really nervous and you feel those butterflies, it's because you really care.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Okay, there were actual high fives in the studio. I teach public speaking, and that is the first thing I say is, when you have nervous energy and butterflies, first of all, don't try to shove it away and pretend it's not there. Own it and embrace it and call it what it is. Nervous energy means you're doing something exciting. Mm-hmm. You are stepping outside your comfort zone. You are being bold and brave, and that should be celebrated.
Absolutely.
And you were definitely bold and brave.
Did your loved ones, had they read or seen you practice, or was it all a surprise that night?
So my husband, he knew some of the topics. You know, I ran some of the parts about him, but he wanted a lot of it to be a surprise.
Deliver what?
So,
yes. We didn't order a pizza.
Yeah, he had to chuckle about that, just reflecting back. He heard it really the whole thing for the first time that night. And I think it really took us both back, you know, because it was so many difficult things that happened and we had never revisited it. Because by the time we took the baby home, you don't have time to remember yesterday.
No, it's one day after another. You've
got to
stay in the moment for keep those kids alive, right? But you did. Like, it was a specific window of time from you arriving in the hospital till, you know, they were ready to roll you down the hall and deliver. But you called it your mansion. Like, you were, you're like, I'm going to make the best of it, you know? And so how long were you in the hospital for again?
It was about 3 weeks, close to 3 weeks. Yeah, 2.5 to 3 weeks. I think when I first was admitted, I was really sad because it was just unexpected. But I really try to always find the silver lining, you know? So now that I was here, you know, I mean, I love Carle Hospital. Everybody was really nice. It's very clean. I love the food. So, I mean, television, you know, so it was the first time.
Gotta catch up on your Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy, the new shows that were out at the time. And I just really hit a point where, you know, now there was nothing to do but be there because I was on bed rest. So just having that time to reflect, to rest, watch TV, listen to the radio. I was able to catch up with so many people that I had lost touch with because you had your phone, you know.
That's all you have.
So I just kind of found that silver lining. So in my head, yeah, I can just pick up the phone and order food whenever you want to, breakfast, lunch, dinner,
but it was
dessert.
Great because so often we have in our mind like the plan, you know, the grand plan. You're going to get your maternity photos. You're going to, you know, your water's going to break and you're going to go in, like all those things. And then when you have to rewrite your script, you know, you can fall apart or you can, you know, see the silver lining and make it a whole new. It's not what you expected, but we're going to get through this.
We're going to get through it. And then the people that you come in contact with when you're dealing with difficult situations, and they're people, you know, like the nurses and the care team, they're skilled with this. They see it every day. So I feel like they also know how to work with you, to talk to you, and also help you see the silver linings. And I think that really did help me a lot.
And I think you impressed them with your medical knowledge. You know, who knew? Who knew that, you know, you could learn so much from, well, Grey's Anatomy.
From Grey's Anatomy.
That, I mean, that was, I think, one of my favorite parts of her story was I mean, that's true story. You
true
brought
story.
Those
Love
things
it.
To the conversation. Like, is there time? Do I pass the window for the shot? That was, I mean, we were cracking up. It was so funny.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so what was the feedback you got afterward?
Ooh, afterwards. I know right at our after party, people came up to me and said, thank you. And that was a surprise to me because you always hear that your story can make a difference or resonate with others, but you never think about it till it happens. So there were people that said that they understood something similar happened to them or they knew somebody that was going through it. I've even had people say someone they were with was thankful to hear the story. So just knowing that that story, as difficult as it was while we were living it, that it gave other people hope and just someone else to relate to, that made it worth it.
I mean, that's what we say. If there's one person out there that can hear your story and feel less alone, feel seen, and that's the beauty of it, sharing your story. Do you know what? Going through the process, I think, and I don't even know if you realized it at the time, part of what you went through in the hospital really did impact your decision to have this big career shift in your life. Like, it's kind of an undertone in the story, but we kind of unpacked that a little bit that you don't even realize it until you think about it, because it was around that time you were ready for a big change in your life.
Absolutely. And I think that that comes from having the time and the space to really just reflect and think about what you want in life and then what's next. You know, you don't want any missed opportunities. And for me, I've always loved poetry. And so I always think about the poem, Dream Deferred. You know, what happens to a dream deferred? Wow. Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? And I think about that poem so much. And when you think about your life, if you don't follow your dream, then you're left without the answer to that question, right? And I didn't want to have any regrets. Kind of deep, huh?
So deep.
Jeanette's mind is blown right now.
Flabbergasted over here. I love that. I mean, that says so much right there. And yeah, I mean, we get to meet lots of women, some who have taken that risk and made the leap, you know, whether there was a net or not.
Yeah.
And some women who are still searching for something, searching for how to make their dreams happen.
Yes. And it's a tough thing. But I know for me, I just believe in like a calculated risk, you know, really doing the research.
Well, there were spreadsheets involved, I'm sure.
And being prepared. You know, but I just, you know, I really thought about it and I said to myself, you know, if I pass up this opportunity, I could regret it, right? But if I give it a shot and it doesn't work, do I have a backup plan?
And did you?
And so I did. And that made me feel really, really good. You know, I had several backup plans. You know, my poor mom was just so concerned and worried. You know, my mom taught school for like 36 years and then retired. So taking those type of risks aren't things that we were used to. But this time I kept saying, just trust me on it. I think it's going to be okay. You know, and here's the backup plan. You know, I had plan after plan after plan. Exactly. And I had really good friends and colleagues that also listened to me and talked to me. And I remember one woman, she met with me at a local business and we sat down and she said, I just want to ask you all of the what ifs. And I thought that was very important. Ooh. Because someone once said, whenever you're starting something new, it is normal for your close friends and family to not want you to take such a risk that could lead to an outcome that you don't want. But what if you took the time to listen to what they were saying and be able to answer all their questions and concerns? All it does is make you stronger. And it also gives you more data to incorporate into like business plans and your plan Bs. And so as she asks questions, what happens if this happens? What happens if that happens? You know, most businesses, you know, don't make it past the first 3 years. If that happens, what do you do?
What if?
You
what
know,
if?
And so all of those things. And so I felt very confident in knowing that if I went into this and it didn't work, that I had done the proper research and had done all the things that I could do.
But no regrets.
No regrets. And that I would have a backup plan.
Someone else, it was a different speaker, and I can't remember who had the whole even if and what if, you know, what if I fail? What if it fails in 3 years?
Angela Shelton.
Ah, there it is. Mm-hmm. And then changing that in your mind to even if it goes under in 3 years.
Exactly.
I got a lot of cake to eat through.
Right.
You know, like there's I mean, always the even yeah. if, but like still do it.
There's
still
no epic fail. There's yeah. cake yeah. to be had.
And for me, I had a profession that I love and still love, you know. So education technology will always have a place in my heart. And I'm still a lifetime member of ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education. I keep in touch with all my tech peeps, you know. And so that's something that will always be a part of me and who I am. And I actually incorporate that into the bakery life.
You I know? Believe it. I love how it was a risk, but it was a calculated risk. You
yes.
did your homework. I love that you brought in the people that you trust to go through the what if questions. Many women or business owners might have gotten defensive or uncomfortable, you know, in that scenario. I love your approach. You're very thorough, very patient, but you had to take another risk to stand on stage, and that's what she said.
Oh, yes.
And a little calculated. I mean, you had support. I don't think you had a backup plan besides running out the back
door. Yeah, I didn't have a backup plan.
But it goes to show that, you know, you got to take one risk, and then you build a little courage to take the next one, and you build a little more courage to take the next one, and then you're living a life fully realized.
Yes.
But if you don't take that first leap, your dreams may be deferred.
Exactly. And I was very, very nervous. But I will say, just the way we constantly met and you coached us, I think that helped us, you know, really get through the difficult parts of the conversation. But it also gave us a different type of energy and confidence. And I'm a really big believer in listening to what people have to say and always trying different ways, you know. And I even think about when we talked about different ways to deliver the information, because it was a tough topic. And it was some that really took me out of my comfort zone, like the hair toss.
Yeah. I mean,
it was hard. I had to practice that.
But yeah, if you're going to bring in, you know, a funnier element in your memory, right? Do you do it just a little bit because it's awkward? No, you go all the way. Like you commit to it. Absolutely.
Yes. And it was fun. It was energizing.
Yeah. And the audience responded. And, it, you know, again, it's that sigh of relief. What I will say about your cast, I mean, they were so supportive. And some of the greatest feedback I've ever heard in a rehearsal process from that group of women, just really supporting each other. And all the feedback was positive, but constructive, really constructive.
Absolutely. And I love all those ladies that we did
Me
the show with. Just amazing. And that was one of the very huge benefits of that, too, because, you know, going into that, I knew maybe two, but we only just kind of saw each other in passing and maybe sat on a sat in meetings together. But now we really, really know each other. And I just feel like when we see each other, it's a different kind of bond, because going through those stories can bring up different traumas in your life, can bring up different tough times, happy times. But watching those emotions go up and down and working together, with it was like a team, you know. And I really love that and appreciate that in this opportunity.
Yeah, and the end result showed, you know, it was proven that this group was cohesive. It was a beautiful show. It was a beautiful night. And you're a beautiful woman sitting
Thank
here
you.
Before us.
And we get to go to dinner and everything.
That's the beautiful part. I love watching that once the show is over, seeing so many people, and I know you're about to be on, you know, another cast member's podcast, seeing people, you know, have a big celebration, and I can see that they've ordered your bundt cakes. And, you know, all those connections that you keep supporting each other. It's really beautiful to watch.
Yes. And every time I see their name pop up on tickets, I yell, "That's my She Said sister."
Love that. Love
so
that.
What was that website?
NothingButCakes.com.
That's the Champaign, Illinois location. And you can deliver to Carrie Rosso, care of.
Yep.
I was about to give away your work address, but I won't. We could seriously talk all evening, but I think that's all the time we have for today's episode. But it is such a pleasure to have you back here. So we got to check in with you and remember that awesome night together, and remember that there's cake to be had.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me.
Thank you. Let them eat cake.
Let them eat cake here on the She Said Project podcast.
Over and out.
Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.